Hey everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jim. Welcome to the 8 o'clock Saturday open meeting of the Central Orlando Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at this time, I'm supposed to qualify briefly. The chair requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meetings are 1 year continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jim Powers.
Hi.
My sobriety date is February 18, 2002, and like I tell everybody, I attend every group conscious meeting I can because this is my home group, and I really want to be involved. And when I got here, I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. I couldn't stop drinking once I got here, and you all said try not to drink one day at a time, and I couldn't do it. So I became an alcoholic somehow or another. And then for 3.5 years, my ego refused to accept it. And so I would do 90 days, 6 months, 45 days of not taking a drink, but I didn't get a sponsor and I didn't work the steps. And what happened was I came to a Saturday night speaker meeting in the little house next door, and a gentleman got up there and told my story. I mean, actually told my story, and I was just nodding and bobbing the whole time. And another friend who had brought me and knew I didn't have a sponsor, he kind of shoved me over to the guy. Now, I picked up a 9-month chip. I'd gone 9 months without a drink that night. And I walked over to that gentleman and asked him if he'd sponsor me. And he said, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." And you know what? The very next day, I picked up a half gallon of whiskey and I damn near killed myself. And on Monday morning, I picked up the phone and I called a guy named Joe. And that's our speaker.
Thank you, Jim. Joe Staley, alcoholic.
Thank you.
I'm glad to be here. Usually when AA holds the hand out and asks me to do something, I try to duck and hide and try to, especially in this case, being Jim kind of came into the program after me. And so it goes around. What goes around comes around. And so Jim got the pleasure of asking me to speak. And I'm not here for any of you. I'm here for me to stay sober. And that's what they told me I had to do. It's about giving this thing away. I don't have to like it. I just got to suit up and show up. And anybody on this wall back here, if you start making faces or noises or anything, you're going to share the last 30 minutes, so let's keep it to what we're doing here. So my sobriety date is October the 1st, 1994. I'd like to tell you when I first walked in here and picked up a white chip that I stayed sober and worked a perfect program and did this deal the right way. And actually, I didn't do that. I was one of the guys that walked in here and tried to cut corners and didn't do it the right way. So I will tell you one thing that I learned early is that AA will screw your drinking up. So if you have reservations about this thing and what this thing will do to you or can do to you, keep that in mind that you may want to leave now, because sitting on a bar stool with a belly full of AA is not gonna help you. It's a complicated thing, and it was for me, which I'll share about. So October the 1st was an amazing day for me because I ceased fighting. I gave up, and it's very important that I understand that it's about surrender. And I struggled with this for a long time from the very beginning. It started with 3 Schlitz tall boys at about 12 or 13 years old. Not a big deal. But I found something that I liked because I changed instantly when I took those drinks. I felt different. I felt good. I felt awesome. I was King Kong until I puked on my shoes, woke up with a horrible hangover, and decided that that wasn't so bad. I don't know that that's quite normal, but for me, I had to get that through my head that that may be an issue, and I didn't for many years. I mean, you think about it, 13 years old, and here you're getting started on the way. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I'll reference my dad because he's a great inspiration to me. He's 20 plus years sober in this program, and I think that I, as growing up as a kid, I got to look around and look at his drinking and what it did, and I could pick that he had a real problem in his drinking. I even swore off that I never would be like that guy. I would never drink like him. I would never act like that. What a complete buffoon with his alcoholism. He was a big shot attorney, and he would go have his martini lunches with an ego this big. And guess what? I showed up, and I was just like him, and I drank just like him. But what ended up happening was is that my family, as we started learning, my mom got sick and tired of this alcoholism thing. And she actually did attend some Al-Anon meetings, and she did start to understand that this is a bad thing. And so she got some help, and she went to counseling, and she figured out some things that she could do to help herself to get better. And as little kids, we were drug into the counseling sessions, and we showed up and, you know, talked about alcoholism, and we got to confront my dad with his alcoholism. And we got in a big circle, and the counselor was there, and it was a big deal, and I laid money immediately he would not get help. I mean, well, he's just running his course and doing his deal. And we sat in the room, and we all prepared the paper with what he did to us and how his drinking affected us and all that good stuff that those counselors give us. And we had bottom lines or ultimatums for him. And the bottom line was that my mom was going to leave. And that was devastating to me as a youngster. That was the even though it was insane and it was crazy and the alcoholism was running rampant, That scared me to death. So the fear starts kind of playing into my life with losing something or the divorce or, you know, all of this stuff in my head, which was pretty scary. But he agreed to go to treatment. 28-day, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. What a place. They load him on an airplane. He hauls up to Oklahoma City, and so we continue this counseling stuff, and we actually got invited up to Family Week. And I said, what a great opportunity. I can go tell him what a SOB is and how bad he treats us and all this good stuff. And so we show up to Oklahoma City with entourage, my mom and everything, and we get in another circle. And we're all going around the room, and we're talking about this stuff, and all of a sudden the focus of this Family Week starts to come back on me. And they start asking me, this counselor over here starts asking me, well, how much do you drink? And, you know, of course I lied, and I had a couple here and a couple there, but the next thing I know, I was in pajamas in a 28-day in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I am still working through that resentment in pajamas and going through some of the humiliation that goes with, because I was too young to be an alcoholic. I was going to school. I was going to Vanderbilt University. I mean, I played football. I had a great life, but I was just a rotten drunk. And the reality of it was that when I got out of that treatment facility, I realized that, you know, there's something wrong here. But I wasn't completely convinced. I wasn't completely convinced at that time. I got out of the treatment facility. I stayed sober for a while. I actually attended Vanderbilt University in Nashville. I had a great, I played Southeastern Conference football. I graduated from there. Don't ask me how I did. It was by the skin of my teeth. But that was a great experience for me. And one of the times that I do remember at Vanderbilt was at a spring game, and I was defensive captain my senior year, and I was in the huddle at the spring game, and I had a coach walk by and said, "Who's been drinking?" And of course I knew it was me, because it was just coming out of my pores. I'd been up all night before, and you know, here's a supposed to be an athlete leading this football team, and I was the drunk that couldn't not go without a drink, and I had no defense, and that's a scary thing. That was the problem, is that I couldn't find a solution to get away from that drink. That's just one incident. I eventually got out of Vanderbilt, ended up getting married, wanted to do the picket fence. It was a drunk-a-thon at my wedding. It was insanity and crazy, and as you can guess, that lasted about 3 or 4 months. I ended up carrying my hefty bag full of clothing over to a friend's house. This is the Vanderbilt graduate, by the way, that, you know, carrying his stuff around in a hefty bag, and didn't realize that maybe I had a drinking problem, but that's kind of where I started. So I ended up continuing to get in trouble, continuing to drink. I tried to hold down jobs. That divorce kind of drifted away. She moved back to New York, and I ended up finding an old friend that we ended up hooking up with, who became my second wife, and I ended up moving to Florida. This was after the treatment facility, and I actually had some sobriety, and I married that lady while sober. And we have two beautiful kids together. They know that they have a sober dad, and that's kind of a cool thing. We ended up lasting for a few years, but alcohol took over, and I was asked to leave the big fancy house out in Windermere, Florida. I ended up on an apartment over there at 436. The shades were drawn. The creditors were calling me every day asking for money. They asked me to pay some child support after this divorce thing went through. That was not an easy time. But I still was drinking. And I had accumulated about $70,000 worth of debt that I had no idea how I was going to get rid of that. And my life was miserable. And it was due to my alcoholism. My parents called me out of the blue and said, invited me to a family meeting in Dallas. I had no idea that I really thought I was going to a family meeting. And I showed up to my sister's house in Dallas, Texas, and to this family meeting, and I thought it kind of odd Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. that I was invited to this meeting. And I show up, and this nicely dressed man comes up in this three-piece suit, and he says, "How you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm fine. How are you?" He says, "My name is Roger, and I'm an alcoholic." Uh-oh. Well, they invited me to come sit down again, and here's this circle of people. My two sisters and my dad and my who was sober. And so, little did I know, my sister was in snorting cocaine in the bathroom before this and doing some crazy things. But they sat down, and I knew the jig was up. That was the day of reckoning, and that was on October the 1st. And they said they gave me an option to go to treatment in Center City, Minnesota, at Hazelden. And I didn't know anything about it. I just knew I didn't want to go, because I had important things to do back in Orlando, a lot of important things like answer the phones to creditors and find out how I was going to eat and find out how I was going to pay my child support and find out how I was going to live, because I was unemployable. And I didn't have anybody to call. I wanted to call somebody, and I didn't have anybody left in my life. Nobody. And I had to make that decision, and I said, "You guys need to give me a minute, because I can't decide right this second." I went into my sister's room, and I got on my knees, and I asked God for help. I said, "What is the solution? What do I need to do here? I'm coming apart. I need to find a solution." And it came to me, why don't you try it out? And I'll tell you that I packed my bags, I got on that airplane, and it was the most peaceful day of my life. I looked out the window. I was full of ego, though, because I dressed up nice because I wanted to look good when I got to Hazelden, you know. You kind of do that. And those doctors, when they check you in at Hazelden, they poke around on your liver and stuff. And I said, you know, that kind of hurts. He said, oh, yeah, because you're probably chronic alcoholic if you're coming to this place. Hazelden taught me a lot. It was an awesome place. I needed that. And, you know, guys in treatment, I hear a lot of the old timers about the treatment. Well, the treatment probably saved my life. My counselor was not even an alcoholic. He was codependent. I said, what the hell? Codependent? How do you know how I feel? I'm pissed off and I'm in Hazelden and you're talking to me. And he said, well, what you need to understand is codependency almost killed me. The light bulb came on. I realized that I was prejudiced. I got to Hazelden and there was this bald guy from New York who was an art dealer. And I didn't socialize with him very much because his values were a little different than this guy from Texas that showed up on his horse. And somehow those counselors kind of picked up on some of that. And they had some ideas for Joe because I was isolating from my peers, as they would say. So, again, in the circle one day I was called out and they said, we understand you're not hanging out with this guy, so we're going to have him plan your day for the next 48 hours. And we're going to see how you get along with that. And I said, what the hell? Absolute, you know, my magnifying mind immediately went to, uh-oh, here we go. But he gave me a couple of things to do. One of them was, I want you to go out and sit on a bench for 1 hour outside, and then I want you to come back in and write and share about that experience. I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and is that it? That was it. That was it. Guess what, folks? I was ready to go. My magnifying mind jumped in there, and I said, I can do this. And next day he shows up, I go out to the bench, and I was there 2 minutes, and I started looking at my watch, and I started looking around, and I started not feeling very well, and I was seeing it started to drizzle, and I started making excuses why I probably needed to go in and not do this 1 hour. And what I learned was how uncomfortable I was in my own skin. To be with myself was just, it was a problem. And it was scary. And it was, you know, that's what alcoholism did. I didn't have a drink in me, and here I was with me, and I couldn't stand that. It was miserable. So I walked back in after the hour. I made it through, and I went back in, and I went into the counselor, and I shared, because I don't know if it's just me or everybody else, but people that get here, it seems that we just kind of get in here, and we just, all this stuff comes out. And I was writing pages of stuff in this treatment facility because they wanted you to keep all this stuff. And next thing I know, I'm in talking to the counselor, and I was completely coming unglued. And I said, you know something? I really don't think I'm going to be able to figure this thing out. And he looked at me and he said, that's the smartest thing you've said since you've been here. We don't have to figure this thing out. We just have to do it, you know. It's amazing that the messages that we get in Alcoholics Anonymous when we're ready to receive the message. So simple. So Hazelden, they told me, made it 28 days. I was scared to death they were going to make me stay there 6 months, aftercare, all this stuff, and I had projected all this stuff. And then they said, nope, we're going to send you home. Well, that scared me too. And they said, you need to find the meanest, toughest sponsor you can find immediately when you get back to Orlando. The minute you get off that airplane, find a sponsor. I said, okay, I can do that. So flew back home, got into Orlando. I looked immediately up. There was a meeting over in Winter Park. I headed over to Winter Park, and I pulled into the parking lot, and it was 12:15. I was 15 minutes late, and the committee started going off in my head. I can't walk into this meeting 15 minutes late. I don't even know anybody here. I'm just got off a damn airplane. I'm a treatment guy. And guess what? I was at a crossroads. I had to make a decision. I walked into the meeting, and the first guy that was speaking was a real estate broker. Well, I'm kind of a real estate broker. I could relate to that guy. And he came up and talked to me. He said, "Hey, how you doing? What's your name? Where are you from?" I said, "Well, actually, I just got off an airplane, and I'm scared shitless, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing." And he says, "Great, you're in the right place. Have a seat, and we'll just go right through this meeting." So, you know, thank God that guy was there, and thank God I took the action to get out of the car and walk in the door, because I fought that a long time and didn't take action. And I got sober at Southside Club, started looking around for a sponsor. And, of course, one that I could manipulate and not, you know, I didn't want that hard, tough guy. I would look for the one that I could manipulate, take advantage of, and outsmart, outthink, outdo all that stuff. And so I found a guy, and he's great. He's still sober today, running around the program, but he wasn't my sponsor. And I heard a guy say, "Well, you know, how do you get a sponsor in AA?" "Well, you ask." And I didn't know that. I thought they assigned you one or whatever, so, but... Anyway, I got the best sponsor in the world. He started me immediately into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, because our first meeting, I carried all these books in, and I was sitting down, because, you know, I take notes, and I had calculators and pencils and all that stuff to figure this out, because I needed to immediately get some results. And I walk and sit down, and he said, "What are all those books?" I said, "It's my Codependency No More book. It's the Bible. It's, you know, all of this great books." And he says, "Well, take all those books and put them up on the shelf, because the only one we're going to be working in is this textbook called Alcoholics Anonymous, this blue one. And you will immediately get into there, and you will start reading. And you will go to the first page." And I went to the first page, and it had writing on it. And he said, "No, that's not the first page. Go to the first page, which has nothing on it." So that's what you know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where you're going to start at step zero. And that's where I started. That's where the journey started. That sponsor-sponsee relationship. That guy saved my ass. I called him all the time. I burned that phone up, because I found a guy that had what I wanted. He was a Martin Marietta guy at 17 years sober. His name was Jerry, and he was an awesome guy. And he always said, "Don't put me up on a pedestal." I never understood that. I still got that guy up on a pedestal. But I understand what they were saying. And Jerry started me in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't have a sponsor in this room, get one. But if you don't, be careful, because they will trick you. They will have you do little things that are out in here that you will not be aware of, and they will trick you into working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous if you are not careful. That has been my experience. So we started. After about 3 months, 4 months of hanging around the first three steps after doing this little prayer that you guys have us do, and I was hanging around on the third step, and my sponsor kept sitting in these meetings over at Southside saying, "If you don't do a fourth and fifth step, eventually this stuff's going to come up like bile in the back of your throat." And I never understood that. What the hell is that guy talking about? Well, I'm here to tell you that one day I woke up and I could taste that bile. And I absolutely was shaking. I was coming unglued. And this is after about 9 months hanging around, not doing the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and living on the third step. And I was great, because I went to a lot of meetings, because I was unemployable when I got here. And I didn't do a damn thing but drink coffee and hang out with old-timers that smoked cigarettes down at Southside. And I'd watch the, you know, the ashes get very long. And, you know, I hung out with those guys and just lived off that until that day. And here again in Alcoholics Anonymous, we always go to crossroads. I hit a crossroads again. I had to make a decision. Am I going to take this next step and get into this fourth step and start the action of this program? and thank God I made the right decision. So I called Jerry and said, "Jerry, my ass is falling off. What do you want me to do?" "Well, nothing. Sounds like you're about ready to work that four step." Told you, I had to kind of have another bruise on my head, which was running into the wall. But I started writing, and they make you do all these columns, and I'll put them in the right order, and what the heck is the end? Which was kind of good. I started doing it on my computer, and I made sure that the lines were all... He said, "No, we will write this on the paper, and it will not be graded. But you will get it done, and you will do it immediately. And you will call me back, and we will be meeting about your fourth and fifth step." Well, this is the tricking part, so pay attention if you're doing a four step. So I did everything perfect. I had the four step all done, and I called Jerry up, and I said, "Jerry, I have completed the masterpiece. The four step is completed, and I'm ready to share with you." He said, "Is it thorough, and is it honest?" I said, "Absolutely." And I actually did. I did a thorough and honest four step. He said, "Great. I'm going to meet you, and we're going to talk about the fifth step." And I showed up with my calculators and my notes and my books, and he said, "Take all of that stuff and go put it in your truck, because you're going to do a fifth step right now." Just like AA comes to you. I'm not ready to do a fifth step. I haven't, which is a bunch of crud. And we sat down, and about 3.5 hours later, I had completed a fifth step. And you know something? I got a little relief from that fifth step. That guy did crazier crud than I did. I couldn't believe that there was a human being in their conduct of sex and all of these little things that we got to talk about that did crazier things than I did. I thought I was terminally and totally unique in all of this stuff. And it gave me a little bit of relief. And he said, "Now you get to go and take this... take some time, and you're going to read through, and you're going to go dust off some books, and you're going to spend some time, and you're going to reflect a little bit about where you're going to go and immediately get into the sixth and seventh steps." And when I first read the steps 6 and 7, I said, "What a blessing. Those are so short. It's easy. It's on this first page. I can jump right in here and get these shortcomings knocked out," which are character defects in action. I didn't even know what the hell they were, so they said, "Why don't you look it up?" And, you know, Jerry was kind of a man of many words, like, "It's in the book. Call me when you find it." And, you know, which kind of, it pissed me off for a long time, but it kept me in the game. It kept me in the game. And it made me search in the book. There was a time that I got through that. I got through my amends, which was critical. I would strongly recommend the amends steps, that you work with a sponsor on that, because I was all over the place in my list. How do I make amends to these people? What to expect and whatever. And I also did not realize that it was not about saying that I was sorry. It was about cleaning my side of the street, which I didn't really understand. And he took me through the different scenarios of what I was going to get to work out with people in my life that I had caused harm to. And that was a blessing that I did that. And I immediately made those amends and started moving forward through the rest of the steps, which was helping others. I was volunteered, and in the meantime, I kind of moved to Kissimmee, got out of the hell hole, and I was down in Kissimmee, and which is an awesome club down there, and had about 5 years sober, which is really when I got into service. I really got into working with others. There was a young kid that came into the club down there, and it was a clubhouse just like this. And this kid came in and sat down next to me. I saw him ride his bike in and parked in the front, and he sat down to me. His name was Todd. And I said, "Hey, Todd, how you doing?" He said, "I'm fine." I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Actually, I'm living in a hotel over here. I just moved into this hotel, and... I actually think I have a bad problem. My wife kicked me out. I'm living in this hotel. I just don't think that I'm going to be able to make it anymore. I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, I think I'm going to kill myself tonight. I can't stop drinking. I've lost everything. I'm helpless and hopeless, and I can't do anything about my alcoholism. He said, I don't even know why the hell I'm here. I talked to that guy an hour and a half, and I don't know what we say or how we say it. I mean, there's no way I could have stopped that guy from drinking or blowing his head off or whatever the hell, but I was damn sure going to try to give him the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that guy took that message and showed up the next night. And I'm here to tell you that that guy is about 10 or 11 years sober today, and he owns an air conditioning company, and he has a life. And he calls me, and he hangs out. But the other side of the story is there's another young guy that gets out of prison, and he shows up to the club down there with his bag, which I could kind of relate to. It was a hefty bag, kind of like mine. And he came in, and he was talking about his kids. I've been in jail, and they put me in jail, and they took my kids because I'm a bad alcoholic, and I can't stop drinking. I said, well, man, that's tough, but we can help you here. We can give you a message of hope. We'll clean you up, and we'll take you through the steps, and we'll hopefully you can recover from this disease. And that kid asked me to take him home that night, and I loaded him in my truck and I drove him. I said, "Well, where is it that I'm taking you? Down 192 somewhere here?" And he said, "Just pull over by the Walgreens here." Well, okay, where are you staying? He said, I live behind this dumpster right now, and this is where I stay. I said, well, I think that's awesome. I think you've got a chance if you can stay sober. What time do you wake up in the morning? Because I'm going to be back here to pick you up. I picked that kid up, and I took him back down to the club, and that kid started staying at the club. He ended up making amends with his kids. He stayed sober for a while. We got him some legal help. He got his kids back, and he moved into a little weekly hotel down there. The guy stayed sober. He got a job, and he had a life. I don't know if he stayed sober, though. If people come in our lives, and they kind of disappear, and you wonder. But the amazing thing is I've run into a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that full circle in 10 years come back, and there they are, and they're sober, and they're doing the right thing. That's the blessing of Alcoholics Anonymous. So getting through the steps and working with others, a lot of things that I had to learn. I can tell you that after getting through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and working through all of my stuff, that things started changing in my life. When I started dealing with my character defects that I thought I did at Hazelden, you know, they have the crash course that you go in there and you really work on those real quick, and they throw you in with a priest, a real priest, and you get to, you know, share your fifth step stuff. Well, I found out that I really thought I was thorough, but I really wasn't. And I struggled a little bit in the honesty part of this program early in my sobriety, which was tough. And honesty is key, and willingness is key. I'm absolutely convinced that for me to stay sober, that I have to continue to work this thing every day of my life, and I continue to do that. You know, I talked a little bit about, I got sober and I had some time, and I talked about my sister going through her situation. One night at 3 o'clock in the morning, because, you know, we change a lot when we get sober. And she had seen this psychic change, or the change that it talks about in the book, and that one of the things that I loved was that my sponsor always talked about being a gentle man. And I never understood what that guy oozed of peace and serenity and the things that I wanted, but I did not know how to get there. And, you know, after going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and learning about how to live life on life's terms, some of that stuff just comes to us. And to be calm in the storm is one of the greatest gifts of this program has taught me. That no matter what comes down the pike, whether death, destruction, I don't know if y'all remember the tornadoes that went down in Kissimmee years ago that killed a bunch of people and stuff. Well, my house was right in its path and went right over. And, you know, it's a devastating thing to go through the trauma and the turmoil. But sober, we can do anything. Sober, we can get through anything. Drunk, I have no chance. I have no chance at all to survive, to live. I'm a firm believer that alcoholism is a progressive illness. I think that if I pick a drink up today, it will be just like I quit 17 years ago. It will start at the beginning and the compulsion will be back. I didn't drink because of the divorces and the money and the kids not liking me and all of that stuff. I drank because I kept feeding the phenomenon of craving. And I stayed in the book, and the guy showed me that, especially in the doctor's opinion, when that sponsor said that you were mentally defective, I had issues with that very much in the front end of this. But what I realized is that I really am, and it really pegs me and is the truth. The gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, I do believe it saved my life. I did share that my sister had an issue, and I got a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and she said, "I need to talk to you. I'm dying. And I was able to pick the phone up on the other end just because I was sober and because I was working a program, and that I could share my experience, strength, and hope with her and give her a message of hope to get help. She checked into Hazelden and to this day is sober. And that is the blessing of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I made some amends with the family, those were probably the toughest for me. I really had a bad resentment with my dad, and I worked really hard with my sponsor about that. And there were the little things that came to me like, "Joe, do you think that he did the best that he could with what he had?" I had to think about that, and they really did. And most of the people in my life have ended up in the same boat, that they did the best that they could, and I carried these resentments and things around, and I pointed the finger at those people, and it really got me nowhere. It really did nothing except cause me a lot of pain and anger and fear. I knew that when I was in that apartment over on 436, and I had my kids with me. And this is the story that always gets me because it was the evidence of my alcoholism. And I was sitting in there, and my kids were in diapers, and they were very young. And I looked around, and I ran out of booze in the refrigerator. And as a good alcoholic, we all try to think, you know, we always have a plan, we always have a scheme. I was going to call the pizza company to bring a pizza and stop by and pick up a 12-pack because the kids were really a pain in my butt and I really needed to do something about that. But the message of the alcoholism was is that I didn't have a drink and then the bell was going off and I had to answer that bell. And I did not have a defense against the first drink. And as you know, the decision is probably made up for us if we don't have a defense against the first drink. And so I immediately turned around and locked the door and I walked out and left my kids in there. And that's a haunting and scary thing, that alcoholism can take someone across that line and cause that much trauma in a life. You know, we pay severe prices for our actions while using alcohol, which we don't have to. And you know, my kids today, they know they have a sober dad. You know, to think about it, I mean, our kids are in their 20s, and they may drink now and then, but they know that dad goes to those meetings, and dad doesn't have booze in the house, and dad drinks coffee, and dad is kind of boring sometimes, and dad watches TV and hangs out, and dad's kind of peaceful, though. And I've got one other story I'm going to share, and then I'm going to wind it up. But you know, and making amends to the family, and Betty D, who you all know, she actually came out to Three Legacies that I spoke at probably 5 years ago, and she actually gave me this chip. And every time I speak, I always keep this with me, because you know, the little things that AA gives us, you know, I try to carry that with me and remind me of where I am and what I do, and to share and give it away. And you know, she's struggling, and you know, the love of Alcoholics Anonymous and God, and she always talks about God, and I always like to bring that in, because I had no concept of God, and I had this sponsor that said, Joe, there's only a couple of things you need to know about God. One, that there is a God and it's not you. And you hear that a lot in AA, but I had to keep this simple. And that's one of the things, is I've got to keep this program simple, because I will overcomplicate it, and it causes me a lot of problems. So whenever I get into my own stuff, it's usually because I'm complicating things. And the concept of God when I first got here was that it was a punishing God, and he let me off the hook really easy. He said, Joe, just know that my God works. He's kept me sober for 17 years, and you can use that God if you need to use him. In fact, if you want to, you can fire that God that you have and get another one. I didn't know y'all allowed us to do that in here. So I did fire that other God that I had, because I did find a God that works for me and keeps me sober. And that's how simple. You know, I was kind of thinking also about, I used to get calls from the ex-wife while I was in the bottle. And I got, and she would just go on to these tirades about all this stuff. And I would just sit there and listen to that stuff, and I felt like my guts wanted to just drop out on the floor. And then I got sober, and I called my sponsor up, because this was continuing to happen during this huge divorce and all this stuff. And I called up Jerry, and I said, Jerry, she's calling me on the phone, she's calling me names, and she's doing all this stuff. And he said, well, did you tell her not to yell at you? I said, well, no. He said, well, tell her not to yell at you, and then if she yells at you, hang up. Folks, that works. I swear, and I never figured, as smart as I am with all these degrees and all this stuff, I never knew that you could hang up the damn phone on somebody that's causing you some grief. So I got the message, and guess what? That's lasted a long time. I will say that I met a lady in AA at Southside Club many years ago, and a lot of you know her here. She's very instrumental in her sobriety. And I just need to share that, because I was fairly new in the program when we met. And I was scared to death, because, you know, I had all these people chapping in my ears about, oh, you better not get 13 steps and all these, you know, you got to watch these AA women and all this stuff. And I will tell you, the first meeting that I sat in, I kept doing this, and I was looking down the table, because, you know, I thought it was kind of unique. And, you know, but anyway, I went to Jerry and I said, Jerry, I kind of want to be friends with this gal. I'm, you know, finished the divorce off, and I'm going through life, and you know, I'm happy, joyous, and free, but what's the deal on dating women around here? And he said, well, you know, you be careful the first year, but, you know, because people were chapping in my ear that, you know, don't do it. Don't do it. And I said, well, but I want to. So, and then my sponsor says, so the wisdom of the sponsor was that, you know, there's nothing in the book that says that we can't date or develop a relationship or whatever. But what I realized is I didn't really know how to have a very good, healthy relationship with not only people in my life, but women in my life and my kids in my life. And I didn't know how to communicate with anybody is the lesson. And I had to learn that. And that lady became my wife. And we went together 16 years. And it's been kind of, you know, every relationship has some of this. But I'll tell you what, character defects can ruin anything. And character defects are about me and cleaning my side of the street. And if I can give any, and I've had to get outside help for issues on how to communicate with people because I don't just do a damn good job of it. And guess what? It saved my ass. And acceptance has saved my tail. And that's Jerry, when I first got sober, before he would allow me to continue in the steps, he took me to a page 449. And then they changed the book around and screwed me all up. So it's now on 417. And so they will trick you and confuse you. But 449 was about acceptance. And that was an important part of my sobriety because acceptance is the key to all of my problems. And any time I'm not accepting something, it's me. And I had a great sponsor that showed me that acceptance is the key. And I have a lot of admiration for the old-timers in this program. I have a lot of admiration for the people that continue to show up and do this thing. This is life and death for me. I'm absolutely convinced that this is life and death. It is a progressive illness. I will die if I pick a drink up. A lot of those guys that saved my ass, the Jimmy J's, the, down in Kissimmee, the Oakleys, and all those guys that try to cram people through the steps in a couple of days, I was going, those guys are a bunch of, well, guess what? They saved a lot of lives. Those guys were right on, and who am I to basically question sobriety of somebody else? My job is to suit up and show up and carry the message. I just got back from New Mexico. I have a cattle ranch out there. I love the Wild West. I have on my boots. And I was out there with family this weekend. And the greatest gift of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I can suit up and show up. And I can show up, and my family was out there. My mom, I took my daughter and one of her friends from Stetson. And we all went out there and had a good time. And my dad's gone through Mr. Sober, and I will tell you he's an egomaniac still. And but he works a program. And the gift is that I was able to go out there and be there with him and share time with him. And he's been battling cancer, and they radiated his throat, and he has no saliva gland, so eating is a chore. I was afraid the guy was going to whittle up to nothing, but anyway. And he loves steak. And so I cooked a big old steak out on the grill, and we're out enjoying our evening, and I was sitting at the table, and I looked over, and a piece of steak got lodged in his throat. And I Heimlicked about 12 times, and I could not get the steak to lodge. And he ended up passing out in my arms. And I laid him on the ground, and for some reason, and I call it the divine intervention, that his airway cleared, and he's fine. But if I was drinking, and I was not available, Alcoholics Anonymous came to the rescue. And I praise God, and I praise this program, because it saves lives. Maybe not the guy sitting in this chair, but we're available. If we're doing the right thing, we're available to carry the message and give that away. If there's anything that I could give you to take away, is just carry the message. And if you don't get that sponsor, you probably ain't going to do so well, because I didn't in the beginning. So I would suggest sponsorship, and I would suggest working this program to the best of your ability. So thank you.